this week on Art in the Air features gifted mezzo-soprano Olo Raffalo about her many roles in opera and as part of the Lakeside Artist Guild. Next, we feature Flamenco Chicago Dance Studio with its founder, Rosetta Magdalene, and her career in flamenco dancing. Our spotlight is on the Upsidaisy Artisan Market happening every Sunday at Chesterton's Thomas Centennial Park.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight. If you're ever in downtown Chesterton in the Thomas Centennial Park on Sundays, you'll now see the Upsidaisy Market, which is a kind of a shopping experience for pickers, hunters, and artisans of various types. We have the founder and curator there, Lisa Woodrich, and she's here. She's kind of the curator of the whole event. And she's brought along one of her, has a display there, Rita Thurman from Pixie Smash Forge. Thank you for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Aloha, welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
I would say make it a point to go there on Sundays. It's fabulous.
Lisa, we want you to tell our audience a little bit about what the Upsidaisy Market is, you know, everything about it.
Okay, great. So the Upsidaisy Market is essentially an art-to-artifact market is what we're calling it. It is a contemporary urban-style flea market with artists, artisans, collectors, pickers, sellers of antiques and vintage items. It's a really eclectic boho vibe with food and live music. It takes place every Sunday from 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock. And it is at 220 Broadway in downtown Chesterton and throughout Thomas Centennial Park.
And what type of artisans do you have there as a general rule?
A little bit of everything, as long as it is made by that person. So we have sculptors like Rita, and she also handcrafts knives. She'll tell you a little bit about what she does, but she's extremely talented. We've got photographers and painters and
tie-dye
artists, mixed media artists, potters, some very talented potters. We have a couple who come in from New Carlisle, Indiana, and they're studio potters, and they own Black Tree Studio, and they do beautiful work. We have a guy from Michigan who's coming a little bit more regularly. Also a studio potter, throwing stuff. Modus is his name. Then we've got a lot of people who do like craftier things, but we lean toward art. So even the craftspeople, we do like fiber art. Let's see, what else do we have? Well, we've got a lot of people who sell antiques, everything from fine antiques to primitives and things like that. So a wide variety.
And so Rita, what a great name, Pixie Smash Forge. Can you describe how all of that came about, how you discovered blacksmithing?
Roller derby for several years, and Pixie Smash was my roller derby name. And I kind of thought that went well with a forge because I wanted something sort of girly and sparkly, but also so Pixie Smash is kind of like a Hulk Smash play. But I worked at Hallmark Cards for 25 years, and they gave us 5 days a week to, or 5 days a year to do something creative. And I blacksmithed on one of those days, and it kind of stuck. So I really like Upsidaisy Market because I feel like it's a different kind of stuff than you normally see at craft fairs. I do the knives and upcycled animal sculptures, any kind of sculptures and paintings. I do a lot of stuff, anything that's made out of stuff. And my knives are also made mostly out of recycled materials. So, and then we're doing, I want to talk a little bit about the thing that we're doing where people can come and try their hand at blacksmithing. We've got a little setup where people can make a little knife out of a piece of a horseshoe. And that was
very good. Where is where are you located at?
My shop is in Winnemac, Indiana, right by the water tower in the Smith Motors building. Bob Smith, my stepdad, he and my mom had the small engine business here for years. So we've got a lot of metal to pick through to make things out of, which is really kind of awesome.
And convenient.
Very good. Well, Lisa, back to you. Tell us if there's an artisan out there interested in, you know, getting involved with Upsidaisy Market, how can they do that?
You can reach out to us on social media. It would be at Visit Chesterton. You go to the Visit Chesterton site, or you can find us at the Upsidaisy Market, or you can go to our website where our application is, www.visitchesterton.org.
And what is the booth? What is the booth fee?
It's $35 a week. And the price actually goes down if you buy a bundle. We wanted to make it very affordable for all artists, and so that we could get more people involved.
Very worth it. It is very worth it, artisans, to go check it out because they have a really great crowd that shows up, the people that show up to get art there. It's just a different kind of, it's a different kind of craft fair. It's not, it's really different stuff. So check it out, artisans.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Rita, tell us how people can find out about your, on web.
I am on Facebook, on Pixie Smash Forge, and also on Instagram. Check it out. It is my goal to do more social media from this week on. So I'm going to really try and get on there and talk to people. That's a good way to, you know, if you want to find me, message me.
Well, we appreciate you guys both coming on Art in the Air Spotlight. That's the Upsidaisy Market. And we also had Rita Thurman from the Pixie Smash Forge, who's one of the artisans there. They're on Sundays at the Thomas Centennial Park in Chesterton, 10 to 4 p.m. Thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air Spotlight.
Yeah, very exciting. Thank you.
Thank you both.
And a quick Spotlight extra. The Valpo Creative Council and DIY Art Studio have partnered to give away 270 DIY summer kits to kids thanks to our gracious sponsors. You can visit their booth at Valpo Art Fest on Saturday, June 25th or Sunday, June 26th to get a chance to take one of these all-inclusive creative kits home. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
That was Summertime. We would like to welcome Ola Raffalo to Art on the Air. Ola has been called a vocal powerhouse. A dramatic mezzo-soprano, she has earned critical acclaim in a variety of roles and venues for not only her contralto-like sound, but also her mesmerizing acting. Her reviews are magnificent. Raffalo's voice has a richness all its own, with a tone that compels the listener to pay close attention to her. And that's what we're going to do for this segment. Larry and I would like to thank you, Ola, for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, Ola, how we like to start all of our interviews is kind of discover a little bit about our guests. So like we could say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us about yourself.
All right. I'm from the Chicagoland area. I'm from a Polish family. My parents are from Poland. I grew up here. I was born here. I grew up in Lamont, which is a southwest suburb of Chicago, and went to Roosevelt University, the performing arts school there. And eventually started doing young artist programs at quite a young age, about 22, 23, and the rest is history. Kind of those young artist training programs are what really got me started professionally.
So what about elementary school? Did you sing in choir? Did you play a musical instrument? What was your young years like?
I sang in choir in high school, and I played instruments throughout grade school. I loved band. It was probably one of my favorite subjects. But I really fell in love with classical music. No one in my family was into it, but it really drew me in a way. I felt like at a time when I was growing into an adult and had all these emotions and experienced life on this deep level, that classical music was mirroring that experience for me. And the popular music at the time seemed shallow in comparison, and it just didn't speak to me the same way. So I really fell in love with the instrumental side of that realm. And then it wasn't until it was time to choose a college that I decided, well, I think I want to be singing and not playing. And that's when I started taking voice lessons to prepare for college auditions.
You know, your instrument, wasn't that flute, if I think I saw?
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, mine too.
And I think I think you still play that occasionally. I saw a YouTube thing where you did play it, like an improv.
I do. Yeah, I do. I picked it back up again. Unfortunately, my flute was stolen many years ago, so I didn't play for many years. And then during the pandemic, it was my, you know, what I bought with my stimulus check. I got myself a new flute and thought, well, you know, at least I'll entertain myself. Perhaps I won't be able to get back, you know, up to par with actually playing this ever. But I did, and I had some gigs that have already paid for it a few times over. So I'm really glad that I took that leap and said, why don't I try this again? It brought me a lot of joy.
That's good. Yeah, you know what I was going to ask about, since you brought up COVID, and we usually ask this later in the interview, but we'll talk about it now. How did COVID impact you? Some of our artists and musicians, you know, they kind of went into a shell, and others flourished. So tell us how COVID and the whole pandemic impacted you.
Well, I had moved to Italy right before it happened. So I was out in Italy doing auditions, networking, meeting great people in the industry, and I had some really big auditions planned. And I had just won a bunch of prizes at this competition there, and all of a sudden it started happening where I was, and I had to flee and come back home. So kind of all of my plans and designs that were going on there were pretty shattered pretty quickly, and I came back here to my parents' place, you know, in Northwest Indiana, and of course, that was a big impact. I was supposed to make some really important debuts that got canceled, and that was hard because they would have maybe been something, you know.
Propelling.
Propelling, exactly. Thank you. Trying to find the word for it. The psychological impact of such a situation, very intense situation, and all of its ramifications, of course, affects a person, everybody. And then as an artist, you try to make sense of it. And for me, after like so much isolation and feeling like nothing mattered and everything I was like striving for in my career life was useless, there was only two composers that I was really interested in singing anymore or studying or listening to. and they were Mahler and Rachmaninoff. Mm-hmm. I felt like those were the only two at that time that could could be sympathetic vibration to what I was going through and what I felt like was happening in the world. And so so then I actually did find solace and artistic connection and a deep soul connection to my work through those composers at that time. So that also was like very pivotal, I think.
And so how did you delve into them? Did you study them personally? Was it just through the music or was it through the composer himself?
A little bit of both. I started delving into the music and playing it and singing it more and really, you know, listening to it a lot, playing it in my head and trying to understand deeply more, you know, what those feelings were. And then a little bit more about the composers' lives themselves. But I try to come first from the musical perspective and then fill in the blanks with whatever biographical or historical information I can find later.
And so so this maybe leads to I was kind of wondering, when you have a character, do you do that same kind of research? And when you're delving into the character that either you've gotten the role of or that you want the role of, are you listening to multiple artists or how do you develop what you're going to present?
Sure. So what I do is a lot different than what most singers do. My approach is always music first. Maybe it's because I started as an instrumentalist, but I feel like a lot of singers get caught up on the text too much. And if it was all about the text, then we'd be doing a play. What it's to me, the text serves the music. So the music without any words should tell you the entire emotional story, the entire emotional experience and all of its layers and ramifications. And if you can really take in the music with your whole being while you're learning it, then you will deeply understand the character and the situation and what the composer's trying to portray. And then anything can be further clarified through the poetry or the text. I feel like that's a further along layer. A lot of singers do the opposite, but that's not my approach.
Do you have any theater background at all? Or I know theater and opera are kind of totally, especially musical theater, are two different approaches, but you have anything like in that acting? Because I mean, opera on stage is acting.
Yeah. I mean, I do act. I do straight acting and try to, you know, I'm always doing auditions for that for film and TV because my agency also does film and TV. So yeah, a little bit of that for sure. Yeah.
Can you compare and contrast the approach to, let's say, now, did you do any musicals at all?
Well, I did musicals in high school.
Right.
I think, well, the only dip, like I'm very method in my way of expressing a character, and I really go deeply into whatever the experience is that I'm trying to have and portray. So the only difference for me is when you have, if it's opera, the music is either a character that you're interacting with, or it is your baseline prompt for your emotion. So you don't have to create the emotion within you. You just have to listen and you're there. And when you're not acting within the musical context, if it's just straight acting, then you don't have that as another thing to play off of. You have to create all of the emotion and the reactions internally. So for me, that, it becomes simpler, but more reliant upon your own, what you can withdraw from your own self.
Well, now we listened to Summertime, which is, of course, from Porgy and Bess as our opening. But we'd like to hear something else that you've done. I think you have something you've done with the Lakeside Artists Guild. So go ahead and tell us what we're going to listen to here.
Yeah, so this is a recording of us doing an aria from Un ballo in maschera, which means The Masked Ball. And it's one of Verdi's iconic operas. Verdi is the composer I've sung the most of, other than the role of Carmen. Which is not Verdi, but so there's a special place in my heart for his work and like his sort of like imprint on the operatic world. So this piece is, it's called Re dell'Abisso Affrettati. It's like King of the Abyss, come, like hurry and come through, basically. It's, she's, my character Ulrika is like a conjurer witch woman who is invoking the devil, essentially, to like tell the fortunes of people. And so this is, that's the moment that we're hearing.
Okay, and let's take a listen to that. Back. That was just beautiful.
Wow.
Wow. Need almost seatbelts to listen to that.
Thanks. So it is pared down very much so into this small ensemble. Our wonderful arranger, Benton Wedge, was able to take what would be a full orchestra and arrange it for this small group of instruments. So that's kind of an amazing thing that we can do.
So what are you looking forward to doing? We hit the pandemic. Now that you're kind of out and about, what things that kind of got put on the back burner that you're ready to do for?
Like heading back to Italy or?
Oh, I don't even know yet. You know, like I said, everything got stopped in its tracks and I feel like I would have to start all over again, which I've been so driven in my career and have been ready to make all the sacrifices to get ahead. And I also, you know, after this pandemic, I'm a little bit slowed down and I want to be a little bit more slow and deliberate about it. And I'm not really ready emotionally to go and get after it again like I had been doing before.
So what is your heart's desire then?
I mean, of course, I still want to continue with my career and, you know, continue to sing this great music with amazing colleagues. And, you know, that's the best feeling for me. Performing with a wonderful orchestra is like, there is nothing, it's an indescribable feeling. There's nothing that compares to that. So that's always my heart's desire. But
I love, you know, like I was watching a lot of your videos and the woman who plays piano for you is, or with you, is just so beautiful. And I was wondering, can you tell us maybe a bit about, I read about your, you know, sort of a personal project, the Slavic repertoire that you're working toward, both of you.
Yeah, absolutely. So her name is Irina Feoktistova. She's a wonderful, phenomenal pianist. I'm lucky to collaborate with her because she's, you know, most pianists choose either they're going to be a collaborative pianist or a soloist, and those kind of lines do not get blurred once they make that choice. But she's one of those very rare entities that can truly do both. I mean, her playing is so expressive, so beautiful.
So smooth.
Yeah. I mean, so she's smooth. Got a lot going on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I love making music with her. And kind of from the beginning, we had this connection. And we talked about how, you know, there's been a lot of conflict in the Slavic world between all the different, you know, regions, and for a lot of terrible history that has passed. And we talked about how in this country, once you come here, once you've been here for a long time, or you've been born here like me, those kind of things like kind of get rewritten, but forgotten a little bit, because in a sea of many different cultures that is America, you find the commonalities within the Slavic culture with each other. So you're friends with people from Russia and Ukraine and Poland and Belarus and all these different, you know, it's different over here, you know, those conflicts aren't the same here. And so we have this project of doing Slavic music that kind of came from my my sentiments and feelings. I feel like Russian composers wrote really beautifully for my specific voice type. And I also, I mean, this may be some controversial ideas here, but I feel like throughout the history, you know, we were tribal cultures before all of the politics and everything, and the bloodlines are all crossed, you know? So who are really my ancestors? Like, obviously my I'm full Polish, but what does that really mean when the borders were changing so many times in the course of history, you know? So I consider when I sing Russian music, that is also part of my ancestry, you know? And so I wanted to do this project that is Rachmaninoff songs and Chopin songs to kind of pull in together those two world, and also the fact that I'm Polish and she's Russian, and we're kind of like, you know, doing both of those. I don't know, there's just something very
you two blend so beautifully. You just blend so beautifully together. It's very seamless. So we would like to listen to a Chopin. Can you tell us which piece we're going to be hearing?
Well, this is one of the Chopin songs, and you know, everyone knows his amazing piano compositions, and they're just so cool and just so beautiful. And he actually was so revolutionary in the piano world. And then you come to find out that he did not have a piano teacher for his young life. He studied music with a musician because in the village where he lived, there were no pianists. So that's also a part of why he was so unique and why he changed the piano world, because he had to like do his own thing and write his own music. And so it has a very specific flavor. There's a lot of Polish folk element in his music. And we get to hear that sort of come through in this piece.
Well, let's take a listen right now. Beautiful piece. Oh, wonderful.
It's gorgeous.
Thank you.
We only have a few minutes left here, but and we're going to finish out with another piece for you. But we want to know a little bit about how people, where they can anticipate seeing you. Tell us a little bit about your involvement with Lakeside Artists Guild first, and then like websites and different things about you.
Absolutely. So the Lakeside Artists Guild, as you know about them already, that they've done an interview here. So we're a group of people that perform here in Northwest Indiana, a bunch of string players. And I'm doing a few concerts with them over the summer at the Cedar Lake Summerfest. So check out their website for those. I'm singing on some of those concerts, not all of them. And that will be Lakeside Artists Guild. You can just Google it. I think it's .org or .com, not sure. Right. And then and just doing some local concerts in the Chicagoland area for the summer and focusing on teaching. I love teaching and kind of preparing for my next thing, which will be to continue a series of Tristan and Isolde that I'm doing in Oregon with the Eugene Symphony. So that's going to be in the fall.
Gosh, lovely.
And how can people find you online?
So my website is just my name, Ola Raffalo, olaraffalo.com. And they can find me there and probably on Instagram as well.
And they can see some of your YouTube things. You also have a YouTube channel.
That's right. Thank you.
Yeah, we don't want to miss that, because then you can actually see you in performance there and everything. Well, we appreciate you coming on Out of the Air. Before we let you go, we want to hear something from Carmen. So set that up for us real quickly here.
All right. Well, this is the famous Habanera from Carmen. It talks about how love is a rebellious bird, and anytime you try to catch it, it flies away. But when you don't expect it, it comes and lands right in your hand. So that's the aria.
Well, we're going to listen to that as we play out. Thank you, Olo Vafalo, for being on Art in the Air. We really appreciate it. Mezzo-soprano, also associated with the Lakeside Artists Guild. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, just a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Rosetta Magdalene to Art on the Air. Rosetta is the inspiration, founder, and director of Flamenco Chicago Dance Studio. She began her intensive study of flamenco in 1992, honing her skills in many ways, studying with flamenco greats and dancing in a variety of settings. Rosetta is also the founder of The Dynamic Divorcee, coaching women to feel powerful and find fulfillment, resilience, and happiness with this life change. Rosetta, Larry, and I thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha, welcome. Thank you for having me.
We're so glad to have you. Well, Rosetta, we'd like you to hear your personal journey and story before we get into your current activities. And I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us about yourself.
Okay, well, I'm going to put it in the context a little bit of how I ended up spending 30 years in flamenco, which I never expected to do. But it was just so from childhood, from really early on, I was always listening to unusual rhythms in music. I had studied piano since I was a small child. I had a lifetime, early lifetime in ballet and studying different forms of dance. But it was always about, to me, the rhythms of music, the sounds, how, even through dance, how I could express myself through as many rhythms and sounds with my feet. As a kid, I did tap dancing as well. And so one of my earliest memories around this was when I discovered as a kid the low end of the FM radio dial, which was public radio. And I would listen to the jazz programming as I did my chores on the weekend. And that was how I discovered Dave Brubeck and an album called Time Out and Time Farther Out, which was all through the liner notes were all about these weird rhythms that he had discovered and put into his music. And a little bit later on as a teen, back in the olden days, there was something called international folk dance. And I would go down to the University of Chicago once a week, and I would walk into the door of the room that the folk dancing was held, and I'd hear these Balkan rhythms and, you know, different rhythms from dance around the world. And we would participate in learning the traditional dances of these people. And I don't think that that has aged out. I think the people who are still doing that are probably in their 70s and 80s today. But it was such a formative influence of being able to learn about culture through the music and dance. And then later on, I got to travel to these countries, much later on, and then see the origins of these different cultures that I had performed as a dancer in. So I even toured later on with a Polish folkloric dance troupe. Mm-hmm. So all of that kind of informed when I first encountered flamenco, why I thought that somebody who did not come from a Spanish background like me could participate in that. And I think I saw it differently from a lot of people who were raised in the culture. So
tell us more about that.
Because all the way along, it was not my culture. So I was not attracted to it because it was a way of expressing my culture. Or when you look at the Hispanic diaspora, so a lot of my students along the way had been from South America, or who had been from the Philippines or Puerto Rico, or different points of colonization by Spain, and they felt it was part of their culture. And to me, it was first, like I said, about the music and the rhythms to me. And wow, how complex this is. This is just so fascinating. It would make me feel like my head was about to explode. And a lot of my students are like that too. It's like, but maybe they're not loving the rhythms quite as much as I did. They're finding them challenging, and they're feeling like, oh, you know, my brain is scrambled now. But that was something I really loved about it. And the fact that when I saw my first flamenco show back in, you know more than I do. I guess it was 92. If that's on my bio, that was the year it was. Yes. And I noticed a few things. I had never considered dance as a profession for myself, because in my world, it was ballet, and I wasn't going to do that. I didn't have the body type. I, you know, didn't have the talent to do that. But I saw this show and I thought, these dancers are not particularly young. These dancers are all shapes and sizes. These women are kicking butt. These women are, they're not fairy princesses. They're not flitting about in space. This is heavy stuff. And that was similar to some of the other folkloric dance I had done in my life, but the other folkloric dances were more standardized. You were doing what everybody in the group was doing. You were not supposed to stand out. And flamenco, I thought, wow, this is about each individual standing out and expressing themselves in a unique way, even within a group performance. And I thought, wow, this could be powerful for people.
So true. It's so grounding, you know, like where ballet's up in the air, you know, flamenco is like firmly rooted to the ground and the sound. It's like so interesting.
Can you describe, Rosetta, for an audience that doesn't know, what is flamenco dancing? I mean, give us obviously this is radio, so we can't visualize it, but, you know, what people maybe misconceptions about it, but, you know, what is it about?
So textbook definition maybe would be that it is the indigenous dance of the melting pot, which was the south of Spain for 700 years, when there was the Moorish occupation. There are also Sephardic Jewish people there. There were the Gitanos, the gypsies, and then there were the Spaniards. And so some part from all of those cultures went into what flamenco became. And I think most people would have a visual of what it is. It's people acting angry and stamping their feet. But really, it was an expression of, especially the people who codified flamenco were the Gitanos. So these were the gypsy people who we believe came originally from India. And so that's why you'll see some assonances, some consonances between traditional forms of East Indian dance and flamenco. Right.
The arms especially, arms and the arm movements. It's just so beautiful and fluid.
But then one more thing, which maybe is kind of technical, but some people might enjoy, that the musical forms of flamenco, each musical form, of which there are more than 100, not all of which are danced, but of which there are many, each has its own key. And sometimes those keys are not traditional Western musical keys. Those are modal. That's modal music. That if you study music history, this goes back to the Greeks who codified those kinds of things. But each one of those musical forms embodies a certain emotion. So what that means to the students who dance this is that if they're going through something in their lives where they're experiencing a certain difficulty or a certain feeling, there's actually a musical form of flamenco that speaks to that, and they can dance it out within that form, which I found to be fascinating as I was learning it. In fact, this is not this way anymore, but when I first started learning, you could only wear a certain color costume for a certain musical form of flamenco when you were dancing it. So it wasn't that you wore whatever expressed yourself. It was keyed in to the emotion that was being expressed in that form.
Now, you've trained other people in other dance forms, like, I guess, for opera, for Carmen, and I think, explain that process to take an existing dancer who's not familiar with that and training them up in how to do flamenco.
It really depends. So with my ballroom dancing people, they already had some experience in the Latin dance form called Paso Doble. So they had a framework in which flamenco fits in, or that was inspired by flamenco. So in that case, it's what elements have to be in this choreography if they're competing. You know, so it's getting the body style and feeling and letting them apply that to what they actually have to do in their dance. And then for theater, when you're dealing with actors, actors are the best dancers in the world, according to me, because they're already going to be embodying the character. And so then we just have to give them whatever they needed in terms of the musical that we're doing. We have to give them the movement that they need, but it's within the context of their character.
So you've traveled kind of all over the world for instruction. So can you kind of run us through that journey, how you found your mentors and your instructors?
Okay. Well, my most important teachers were here in Chicago. And then I would do some few weeks at a time study, mainly in Sevilla. But I don't consider those to be my important teachers. That gave me It was not what they taught in Spain. It was the way of life, and it was just observing how they moved.
It was the flavor.
Observing their attitude toward life. And I would say most of what I teach now, I taught myself, which I also teach my students to do. I always tell them the most important teacher you're ever going to have is yourself, because you're the only person who can take all of these influences that you're learning from various teachers and various workshops and experiences and apply them to your body. Because we can admire other dancers, but they might not be the physical type that we are. They may not be, we may not have the same emotions that they have. So we can't bring out something. I think imitation for a while can be important. I think we should try to emulate the artists we admire. But ultimately, it's this great journey of bringing all of that together and getting quiet and still and going, okay, who am I now? How does all of this funnel through me and come out as the unique representation of who I am? And I think that's really important, whether you ever set foot on a stage or you never do, because it's your relationship with yourself.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. So how much of it is created, we'll say choreographed, where it's specifically different moves in time, and ad-libbed? Is there a certain amount of each that goes, like when you're playing with a specific music?
So that's really interesting, Larry, because in my first 10 years of flamenco, probably, what was always drilled into us was this is an improvisational dance form. It's made up in the moment. And I, believing that, it can be really intimidating when you're a young dancer coming up, or not necessarily young, when you are a student learning this for the first time. And what I found was that is not really true. It depends on what you call, what you consider improvisation to be. Because really what improvisation is, as I was saying to Esther, it's kind of the accumulation of everything you ever learned and resides somewhere in your brain and comes out when it's not consciously expected to come out. So is that improvisation? Yes, it is, but it's not as intimidating as it may seem, because if you practice for hours and hours over years and years, a lot of material lives inside you. And you may not even remember where you first learned it, but it will come out.
It's very interesting because the music is so passionate. So do you ever get so lost in the music then it changes where you started from with the dance? And I think that would change with a partner, because then you've got a bit of choreography in there. Is there room then to get caught up in the music because you've got somebody else's, you're responsible for somebody else in that dance?
Well, I think a lot of people think that flamenco is more of a partner dance form than it really is. Certainly you can dance with a partner. Normally that would be done on stage, or it would be done with something simple. So there are a few forms of flamenco that are codified more, that have some set steps you can rely on if you need to dance with a partner, that you won't get lost. And in those, so for example, the folkloric dance Sevillanas, it's codified into four little dances that make up the Sevillanas. But within that, there's a lot of room for improvisation and surprising each other with what is he going to do? What is she going to do? You know, and so long as you have certain things that stay in the same place, there is, even in the partner situation, sometimes in a partner dance, one person will dance one verse, they'll come together, and the other person, just like a variation in ballet where the male dancer will do his variation and the female dancer, you know. So yes, there is room for that. But also, yes, you can get so lost in the music, or a lot of times when you're with live musicians, they play something you don't expect to hear. And then you kind of have to go, okay, where am I within this now? But those are where interesting things happen.
Yeah.
I think it's not interesting when that happens to you for the first few times. Because most dancers start out with set choreographies, which they are expecting to do pretty much the same way.
So Rosetta, do you still have time to dance, like with the school and the teaching? Are you still an active dancer?
No, I am not. And I am not sad about that, because it's also, it's exhausting. When you are the person who is producing the show, plus you have to perform in it, you don't really have time to center yourself and go out. So I feel like I did that for 25, well, I think up until right before the pandemic. And there are many other things that also I'm excited about doing in life. So while I still have the school and I'm still teaching, I want all the rest of my time to be able to be doing other things. You know, it's like the older we get, I don't know if you feel this way, but I feel like the older I get, I feel the pressure of time. And I think, wow, there's so many other things I want to do. So that's where I am right now. But I'm happy to still be teaching.
With the pandemic, you went to online teaching. And so is that still, I noticed recently that you're back to in studio, but do you still have that online?
People say they want to come back. But with people, what people say and what they actually do often do not bear much of a resemblance. So yeah, we're doing once a month workshops, and there's a page about that on my website. But we're still doing, I do two classes a week that are for students with some previous flamenco experience. And those are done through private Facebook groups and online with replays available. And this gives so many things to students that they had been bugging me for years before the pandemic. People wanted to whip out their phones and record my class. I'm sorry, no, that's not going to be happening. But now they have it, and now they can replay that. So they have access to the current six-week session of classes and the previous. So they've got a lot of material they can draw from. And if the opportunity ever happens, if we have enough students who want to come into the studio, of course.
Tell us the process of how an online class would work. I mean, it seems like that, you know, sometimes, you know, we're all in this new Zoom era, but tell us how that would work and how you can interact and get the same type of feedback and immediately like you would if you were in the studio.
It's not going to be immediate, but often in a live class, it's not like students are interrupting every moment and stopping the flow of class. So we do them through private Facebook groups, and they can comment live. And about three or four times during the class hour, I will come in and check on those comments and answer concerns. Because we have the Facebook group that's there all the time, I can come in and do special videos if somebody needs a little extra help. So, and they have the community together. However, it's not the same as 3D. So it just depends on what your learning style is, I feel like.
So just quickly, we touched on the pandemic, but how did it affect you personally? And you had to kind of shut down and everything. Did you find it was a creative period for you, or was it one where you kind of withdrew into yourself? You know, different people react differently to being shut down like that.
Well, to me, withdrawing into myself and being creative are one in the same. I am an introvert, so I was not thrilled that we were in a pandemic and a lot of people were suffering. But for me personally, it was just a wonderful time, and I got to try something new and start to teach students all over the United States online versus just in Chicago. So I guess with all things, there are difficulties and blessings. Hopefully, if we see it that way.
So what does the future look like? And you just mentioned that, you know, people are not really ready to come in for the in-studio. So how do you think you're going to grow it? Or do you want to, you know, or do you have other plans, other directions?
No, I don't think there's really growth, because what I have found is flamenco is an aging art form right now. Whereas most of my students were grad students in their 20s when I first started 20 years ago. And now I would say average age of our students is 40s and 50s, with a few people in their 30s. I've got one or two in their 20s. So the numbers are not there because things are changing. And but I love being able to serve and give more chance for expression to our older students who maybe have never had a chance to do that before. So I'm happy.
Is it easier to work with someone who's had dance experience versus someone who's maybe kind of a novice at dancing?
Yes, it is. And fewer people have previous dance experience. So in my generation, lots of people studied ballet and did all of that. But now people usually in their youth really do sports and less of the arts. So, but I love teaching people who have never danced before. They come at it with completely new eyes to how they see it. And so, they don't feel like they have to make it look pretty. Nobody taught them that dance has to be pretty or delicate, you know, not at all. So,
you know, we just have about 1 minute left. We especially want you to share with our audience how they can find out about you in case they want to take classes or just learn more about you personally. So tell us about like websites, Facebook, how to get in touch with you.
Okay. So if you can put this in, if you have show notes, this would be good because this is a mouthful for people to have to type in. But our website is flamencochicago.com. And so that would be the first place to go and get on my email list, because that's how you're going to learn about things that sometimes don't show up on the website. So also Facebook, we have a business page on Facebook, which is facebook.com/flamencochicago.
And where are you located at if you want to see in studio?
2914 West Belmont Avenue, which is a couple blocks west of Belmont in California.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. Rosetta Magdalene from Flamenco Chicago, and you can see her at those websites she gave, and we'll also have a link here. Rosetta, thank you so much for sharing your story on Art in the Air.
Yes, much appreciated. Thank you.
I enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Art in the Air, and we'd like to thank our guests this week on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art in the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP. Art in the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP station manager, and Tom Maloney, vice president of radio operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Our theme music is by Billy Foster, with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. Underwriters for Art in the Air, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments, and Mary LeVan, Arts Patron. Art in the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there. So don't just be an Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your